Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Everyone, and welcome to Pixels, which is a show where we talk about video games, one of many. We talk about video game news, try to figure out exactly what's been happening in the past couple of weeks. We're going to cover today PAX and GDC. I think PAX is going to be mostly Blizzard news, unless I've missed a few other important tidbits. But GDC is going to be all about Steam machines, Steam Links, VR, and all of that good stuff, which I think we were pretty enthusiastic for 2 weeks ago on the last episode. And something weird happened in those 2 weeks. We'll discuss that. Something weird happened in my mind, which might be the fact that I'm fresh out of a dentist appointment. As I was saying earlier to my two wonderful co-hosts, that might be the reason why I might not be fully coherent, but also it might be because I'm just, you know, never really coherent. James and Jeff are both back on the show. James from the UK, Jeff from the US. How are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm doing good, thank you.
Excellent. James is more... Is it fair to say you're kind of an indie-focused gamer and journalist?
The majority of the professional work I do is indie-focused because that's the niche I could get into, but I play everything.
Okay.
I think it's fair to say that I'm indie-focused.
Okay, all right. But you're, as all of us, a gamer, which is all-encompassing, of course. And Jeff... Jeff Kanada, 2N1Ts, is an I love everything gamer. I think enthusiasm is the thing that defines you.
Oh, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, it seems like it's a recurring theme in your life, at least from what I've been following.
Yeah, that's fair. When we did the Totally Rad show, we used to like to say we were bringing the enthusiasm back to enthusiast press.
I don't remember that catchphrase, but it's pretty good, and certainly you were driving it. And from what I've heard in the recent weeks, that enthusiasm is sort of semi morphing into something of a little bit of aggression in Heroes of the Storm, which is your new gaming darling, right?
Yeah, I have gotten way down the rabbit hole for Heroes of the Storm. It's really the first MOBA that I've loved. I know a lot of people who are Dota or League of Legends aficionados consider it sort of my first MOBA, but it really was my first MOBA, and I love it. And I've gotten to the point now where I can get easily frustrated when people don't do their jobs.
That is completely understandable. I might have gotten frustrated in a few games, not MOBAs, but others. And yeah, sometimes words that you don't mean come out. And
I like to stay positive, and I don't enjoy indulging that side of the frustrations. But I do feel like that is a uniquely team-based game, and it requires at least a willingness or a desire to be part of the team and work cohesively as a unit. And when people just don't seem to care, that makes me upset.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you shoot off and you stun someone really well and no one goes in, you get frustrated easily. You don't want to take out on them. It's like, come on guys, I set that up.
Right. Well, or we're in a 4v5 situation because our fifth member is off doing something in the corner on his own. It's like, hey, everybody's in the fight except you, pal. Why is that? we will lose. We cannot win this because you're off
picking
doing something.
Flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I certainly understand when there isn't even a willingness to be trying to do the right thing. When you're trying and failing, it's one thing.
Right.
But when you're just like actively sabotaging your teammate's game, I understand that can become frustrating for sure.
Yeah, I've been in situations where people have literally said to me in chat, I don't even care if I win or lose. And I say, well, then why are you here? Yeah, go play co-op mode. I don't mind if that's your perspective, but don't get into my game where, hey, I want to win. I'm playing to win. I'm not going to be mad if I lose. I'm going to be mad if someone on my team doesn't care about winning. You know, let's all at least try. And if we get honestly beat, then we get honestly beat, and I can accept that. But at least play to win the game.
Yeah, pull your weight and contribute.
Yeah. Or try at least.
Yeah, for sure.
Blizzard at PAX has made a couple of announcements that one of them might be trying to address this issue, but maybe not in the way that is going to be satisfying to you and solve your problems, Jeff. Just to step back just for a second, PAX East is a yearly show in Boston where Blizzard now goes pretty regularly. It started back when I was still at the company. Disclaimer, I used to work for Blizzard Entertainment, so maybe I'm going to be making a little bit larger sized segment for Blizzard's announcement because I'm just so excited about their games. But they talked about Heroes of the Storm in a conference where they also discussed Hearthstone and Overwatch, which we'll get to. But for Heroes of the Storm, they mentioned that they would be allowing in an upcoming patch the muting of team players. And it would seem like that would go against, it would favor the people who are going off doing their own thing, you know, without caring about the team, whereas the people who try to construct a strategy can be muted. I don't know how efficient this is going to be for team play. It's going to mute the trolls and the guys who are just genuinely screaming at you, but...
Well, I think what it is it's going to be a data point for Blizzard. If there is one player who's constantly muting, is the muter of people, I think that's telling in one way as well. So if you have a person who's constantly going off on their own and muting the rest of the team, I think that's as damning, a piece of data as somebody who's constantly muted by others. So I think ultimately what I hope they use it for is to just gather data on players and play styles. And then, you know, I think their proposed goal is to do what I think a lot of other multiplayer games have been doing. I think Halo did it. Anyway, putting people in their own corral, you know, corralling together all of the unpleasant people and making them all play with each other.
Right.
Yeah. Halo definitely does do that, and Titanfall did it very recently as well, where everyone that trolled played by themselves.
There was something about LoL as well. I listened to a super interesting talk by a LoL developer who was saying, ultimately, we put those kinds of people together, and if they want to play, you know... I think it might even have an influence on the gaming, you know, the game as a whole, because no one wants to be playing with people who are just going off doing their own thing all the time and therefore losing all the time. Although I guess if they're also matched up against other people who do that as well, then the chances are a little bit more balanced. But they also announced clans of up to 9 players. So you can only have one team. You can't have two teams running in parallel, because one team needs 5 players. That's kind of cool. And then another thing, aside from Sylvanas, which I'm not sure, Jeff, you know, you're the big Heroes guy, so if you want to jump in and tell me how awesome one of these things is, please do.
They're all super awesome.
The other thing that was pretty cool is Heroes of the Dorm, which is a way for a sort of tournament that will ultimately allow the winning team or teams to earn a college scholarship. And that is also going to be televised on ESPN. I'm saying televised, but might be just ESPN, like weird internet ESPN. But my understanding is that ESPN is like a huge deal in the US and that this legitimizes esports slowly.
Yeah, I don't think that you'll find it televised on actual ESPN on the cable channel, but ESPN has a bunch of arms. I could be wrong about that. I'm just missing my gut.
You might do. I mean, Dota 2's International was televised on ESPN last summer, so it could be. I don't understand how ESPN works either properly.
Was it televised on actual ESPN or like ESPN 2 or something?
I think it was ESPN 2, but yeah. I'm not sure.
Hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, not to minimize it at all, but yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of different broadcast variants of ESPN, but it is a big deal. It's a big deal, and I find it funny that, you know, it basically, this contest is, if you spend all your time in college not studying and playing Heroes instead, we'll pay for your college.
That is, you know, that does seem like a cool deal, except there are going to be how many, you know, a few dozen teams competing and only a few people who are going to actually get the right. tuition. So
everybody,
you know,
else flunks out.
Exactly. Well,
I mean, that happens with college sports now anyway, doesn't it? It happens
good
with
point.
American football and baseball.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
More parallels.
Yeah, so, you know, esports is just like regular sports once again. Mm-hmm. Another game which I think a lot of people have been very much into recently is Hearthstone. And they announced a few cool things. The first one was a sneak peek at the iPhone, Android phone UI, saying that it would be released in the next couple of months, more or less. Mm-hmm. And the UI looks like it could work on the phone. They basically blew up all of the essential elements. So all the cards and the minions and all of that looks like it's zoomed in a little bit on the... It takes more screen real estate. And I've been getting back into Hearthstone recently. And I don't know if I'm going to be playing on the phone, but if I am, there's going to be no stopping the Hearthstoning.
Except for maybe spotty cell phone coverage, huh?
Which, yeah, I'm really hoping, you know, this might be a serious motivator for ISPs to get better coverage, you know, mobile service operators to increase their coverage, or at least for us to lobby them to do so. We don't have good coverage in the metro in Paris.
I wonder if this will result in more dropped games in total, or if they have a plan for that.
I'm guessing it will. People are going to drop.
Right.
I wonder what happens now with the disconnected games in Hearthstone. Is it just counted as a loss if you lose?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think you're going to have to be somewhat sure that you can finish your game if you start it on your phone.
Don't start that arena run on your phone, man.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the you have like a couple of minutes to reconnect, so there's still a chance. Just run to that next tower. They also announced the Blackrock Mountain Adventure with what was a pretty lovely song that on another show I do, The Instant, Scott Johnson kept playing to very much to the delight of the other hosts. And it's going to work just like Naxxramas. It's going to be a fight between Ragnaros and Neltharion. For those who know what those are, it's very much ingrained in Warcraft lore. There's going to be dwarves. And some cards were... I'm not going to detail them here, but some cards are have really cool mechanics. One of the things I liked... So, it's going to be a bunch of wings that you open, you beat the bosses, they have special different powers, and you earn, in total, 31 cards. So it's not going to change everything in the game, but it's going to push it in certain directions. One thing I enjoyed was the way they are including dragons and the interaction mechanics between dragons, because it's not going to be like murlocs or mechs or that kind of thing. It's going to be, if you hold a dragon in your hand... it's going to have an effect on another minion you would play that could or could not be a dragon, which is kind of cool because it does. I read that on Reddit and I thought it was very astute. it kind of keeps the power feeling of the dragon. That is that one big thing you keep in your hand. And it doesn't mean that you're swarming your enemy necessarily with dragons. So yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. Do you guys play Hearthstone?
I play it on a very basic level. Like I find a deck on Hearthhead and I play it for maybe, like, when I don't have access to my computer, I'll play it, but I don't play it enough to understand the meta behind it.
Okay.
Yeah, I play it a lot. I love it. I tend to get focused. I only have room in my life for one Blizzard game at a time. Blizzard games own me, and they tend to cannibalize each other. So now I'm sort of in the Heroes thing, and I played a lot less of Hearthstone. But I have to say, I love how Blizzard finally has a property that they can update much more frequently. There's, you know, the history of Blizzard is a story of delays and when it's done and long waits for, you know, sequels and expansions to things. And how cool is it that they finally have a product where it's like, hey, guess what, guys? We're announcing a new expansion and it's going to be out next month. Boom. We just had another expansion, 2 months ago, 3 months ago? The fact that they can put these out that frequently, they're still full of imagination and interest. You know, it's very much the Magic the Gathering model, but mm-hmm. they're able to do such interesting things like this, you know, the fight that happens, the boss battle that happens in the bar where you're not fighting right. one boss, you're fighting everyone at the bar and random cards just keep popping into the fight. It's just clever, and it's something you can only do digitally, and you really would have a hard time doing that with physical cards on a table. So mm-hmm. Kudos to them. I just love this product.
It's interesting that you see this as the property that they're updating on a more regular basis, which certainly is true. But as you know, as a former employee of the company that had to do with communication, internal delays aren't, you know, a thing as well. There's a talk by Josh Mosquera at GDC. I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit about the road to redemption with Reaper of Souls, with Diablo 3. And he goes into much detail of everything that's happened in the Diablo 3 story, really, and the launch issues, the launch ecstasy, and how they worked to do things and to fix the issues that they had, and the numbers, the insane numbers that they saw initially on that first weekend. It's really, maybe it's because I was living this again from the inside, which it speaks to me in a very personal way. But they also mentioned, he also mentions, you know, we do have internal milestones, and they're not always met. I'll put it like that.
I believe it.
And go check out that talk by Josh Mosquera. Diablo 3's Road to Redemption with Reaper of Souls, especially if you're in the gaming industry, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful talk.
Mm-hmm.
Overwatch, are you guys excited for Blizzard FES?
I'm getting more and more interested. I haven't yet had hands on with it, but everyone that I have heard from who has spoken very highly of it. And you know, I'm such a fan of that company and their level of quality that they hold themselves to. I have fallen out of love in recent years with first person shooters in general, but I'm certainly willing and eager to have something win me back and make me love them again.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm a big fan of like the arena-based first-person really fast shooters, and there's always something, always looking for the new thing in it, and I really enjoy Blizzard games as well, and I'm really excited to see what they do with it.
So I had the chance to play it at BlizzCon a few months ago, and at this show, I have to say I was a little bit disappointed. They announced the beta will be coming fall 2015, which I was sort of holding out hope that it would be sooner than that. But, you know, that's what happens with ready, you know, when it's done, Blizzard Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
But they also announced a couple of very cool characters for somewhat different reasons. McCree is the Clint Eastwood robot cowboy, more cowboy than robot, actually. And I think he embodies why Overwatch is exciting. It's because they give these abilities in this team-based arena objective shooter, competitive shooter, and they give these abilities to the characters that seem completely overpowered from that mm-hmm. character's point of view. And you look at those and you're like, holy crap, I want to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. The McCree's abilities are basically shooting his pacifier, and with the right click, he can just empty his clip or his barrel in very rapid succession. So it's like, you know, a super quick hand on the hammer, boom, 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 boom. I'm shooting my six bullets in one go. And his High Noon, I think it's called, ability slows down time. Actually, in your game, it slows down. And I was wondering how they could even make that work, because obviously the other characters are not going to be slowed down, but it slows down for you. And after about 3-4 seconds, you have reticles that manage to get to the enemies that you have in your field of vision, the enemies' heads. And if they, when you press the button, all of those that have reticles on their heads die instantly. Hmm. And that seems super awesome. On the other hand, the people on the, you know, that are not executing that move, so everyone else, actually can see you slowing down, because in the game, for everyone else, you are slowing down. There's a little tumbleweed that goes, you know, rolls behind you, and they can kill you a lot more easily, obviously, because you're very slow at that point. So I just thought this is the kind of balance thing and coolness factor that Blizzard does really well, and that game brings to the mix, because it's like having, you know, superheroes, or I'm fond of saying it's like having fighting game characters that are all so different within the game.
Yeah, and it looks like they're going after, so Valve with Dota do the same thing, where they basically balance characters around the idea that everybody is overpowered. So
yeah.
So with McCree, he's overpowered in this one specific aspect, and if you can use him well, then you can play a lot better than anyone else.
For sure.
And if you can play other characters to counter that, then no one's overpowered, because everyone's balanced with the fact that playing your character well will eliminate that overpoweredness.
And they do that really well. It was one of the design tenets of World of Warcraft as well. It's everyone should feel overpowered, and, you know, mm-hmm. feel being the operative word here, of course.
Yes.
The second character is Zaraya, which is a badass butch Russian woman, whose name, by the way, my friend Pierre on Twitter told me that the name on the gun, there is an engraving on her gun, which translates as Avenger, and on the chest there's Shield. So it's kind of a Marvel reference there, apparently.
And McCree has Bamf on his belt, which is the Nightcrawler teleportation onomatopoeia.
So he does.
It is, but I'm fairly sure it stands for badass mother effer.
No, I get that too, but yeah, if you're talking Marvel references, if you're going to make Avenger and Shield into Marvel references, then fair enough.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the other thing is, so she has pretty cool abilities. You know, she has like a gravity well that sucks everyone in with her big power move. But he also, it was, I'm going to forget the name. Jeff Kaplan. I can't forget that name. Jeff Kaplan was doing the presentation, and he mentioned one of the reasons for designing Zaraya was, first of all, he actually said they talk about diversity a lot, and famously Mike Morhaime mentioned this at BlizzCon last year, and he mentioned it again. He said diversity was an important value for them, and they were paying more attention to it, which, as I often say in this show, is a value. It's an issue that's dear to my heart, so I appreciated that. But he also mentioned the fact that they were mindful of integrating different body types. And certainly Zaraya is a heavier body type than most of the video game characters, even including in Overwatch. So I think it's good and refreshing to see that they're caring, they're worrying and caring about this. And that also it doesn't need to be an entire controversy. every time something like that is mentioned. It's just, hey, we care about this. Soraya is cool. She's badass. As long as she's badass, who cares whether, you know, she's a woman, heavy or whatever. Yeah. She's just cool. So
yeah, Blizzard are very good at that kind of thing.
All right, that's about it for PAX. Let's move on to GDC and Steam Machines, which we discussed quite a little bit last episode. And for some reason, I thought I was going to be more enthusiastic about this than I actually am. We discussed it a little bit before we started recording, and I think you guys are also not as hyped as maybe we thought we would be a while ago about Steam Machines, right? Maybe, Jeff, if you can give us your feelings on it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's certainly a large product line across a whole bunch of different companies with a whole bunch of different specs and a whole bunch of different price points, which sounds to me like buying a PC has always been. This feels more like the rollout of an OS than in really the rollout of a hardware spec, because you're really in uncharted waters anyway, and there doesn't seem to be any unifying aspect of Steam Machines per se that helps you make an informed decision, which is kind of the dream, right? The dream of the PC as a console is something developers can develop for and know exactly what you're getting, so that you will have a game that performs a certain way no matter which Steam Machine you buy. That's not the case. You are still going to have widely varying performance issues based on the hardware that you're purchasing, based on how much money you're spending. Really, what is happening is you're having the option of having Steam OS, which for me is not particularly compelling. And I think it's even more telling that a lot of these Steam Machines will dual boot Windows and Steam OS. So even those companies are showing some sort of equivocation over whether, you know, they think customers are going to want a pure Steam OS machine.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle to see what the difference is between buying the Alienware Steam Machine to going down to PC World and buying a computer there right now, apart from the fact that they're installed on Steam OS. The whole idea of them, as you said, Jeff, the whole idea of them being uniformly built for developers was the original thing. But the fact that everything's coming with different hardware doesn't help that at all.
I really think, yeah. Sorry, James.
I was just going to say that to me, it feels like Valve are trying to launch their own, like they want to go up again. They want it to be Steam OS versus Mac versus PC.
It, you know, that's what it felt initially, but it feels like their heart isn't in it anymore. I'm wondering if they weren't doing this as a reaction to Windows's proprietary path that they were going down. And that now that they've, you know, it seems they've made up or maybe received assurances from Microsoft that gaming, you know, open gaming isn't going anywhere. They're like, all right, we said we were going to do it, so we have to, but whatever. They're just PCs with an OS where, by the way, having Steam OS cuts you off from, it's Linux based. So it even though there are a lot more Linux games now than there were before, there's only a fraction of what is available on PC. So by the mere fact that you would be installing Steam OS on your machine, you were limiting your game library. And that might be fine, but I was kind of wondering whether they, you know, if they would be going with like a three specs tier system. Like there would be good, better, best, as Apple sometimes does it. And you would at least have, and they would be rolling. So every year they would update the good, better, best designs, and that would at least give you a little bit of direction. But that's, as you were saying, Jeff, it's not the case at all. It feels very discombobulated or something like
that. Easy for you to say.
And especially with the Steam Link, which is basically, to sum things up, the Steam Link is a $50 piece of hardware that is a gamer's version of the Apple TV or the Roku box or whatever. And it allows you to, it's optimized for streaming Steam games. So if your goal is to be playing Steam games on your PC, why do you need an entire machine? You probably, I'm guessing, already have a PC where you have games in your house. And if that Steam Link works really well, you connect a Steam controller to it, And it would work as well as a very expensive Steam machine would, because the prices range from $450 to $2,000. There aren't any cheaper options. So I don't know. I'm feeling guilty that I'm lukewarm, but I'm definitely lukewarm, even more than that.
I mean, I'm much more excited about the Steam Link than the Steam machines because of what it could allow me to do with like if I was to have friends around to play Nidhogg or something. I can plug my Steam Link into my TV, link it up to my computer and play games on my TV like that.
Right.
But yeah, I'm lukewarm on the Steam machines as well because I would much rather build a PC myself for probably the same cost and have access to my full library as opposed to one that's cut down.
But I think, I'm not sure the Steam machines as individual machines would necessarily be aimed at us. Could we, as gamers, recommend a Steam machine as an alternative to a console for a friend who wants a good gaming machine?
So if say, one of our friends came up to us and said, hey, I'm looking to get into PC gaming. All right, I've got £1,000 to spend. What should I buy? Then I would... assuming they can boot into SteamOS and Windows, I would recommend a Steam machine.
But if you can boot into Windows, just as a side note, you don't even need SteamOS because the only thing it does is a subset of what you can do on Windows.
True. But with a Steam machine, I feel like we know that they're going to work.
Right.
And they're not going to be overpriced as well for what you're getting. Whereas if you were to buy a pre-built Windows machine from someone like Best Buy or... iBuyPower, then that might be a more overpriced machine.
I don't know. The Steam machines seemed a little bit overpriced as well, but
that's true.
I don't know.
And then, of course, we also have mutual friends who work for things like Doghouse, and I would recommend people go there instead of SteamOS. I think it very much comes down to what the customer wants from those Steam machines or from their buying machine.
Yeah.
If someone was looking for a casual experience, I would send them to a console. But if someone was looking
it even gets more interesting now that Windows 10 has such interesting gaming functionality. You know, the sort of crossover to Xbox Live and all that seamless integration. I think it makes, and you know, we had David Eckelberry on DLC this week, who is a game designer for Fable Legends. He's the game director. So he works with Microsoft, obviously their first party at Lionhead. But so, you know, take what he has to say with a grain of salt. But he also pointed out that perhaps this is a really good thing, that it keeps Microsoft on the ball. And, you know, the stuff that they're doing with Windows 10 is a reaction to how dominant Steam is, and that having competition in the marketplace is good, and it makes certain that the Windows team prioritizes gaming going forward in the OS, which it certainly seems Windows 10 does.
Yeah, it's certainly feels like there is a level of reaction both on Microsoft's part and on Valve's part. And it's possible that that's what they were hoping to accomplish to begin with the Steam machines, and now it's not really needed anymore. And as well, you know, the Steam Link to me accomplishes everything I would need from a potential Steam machine in my living room. So I don't know. For me, the Steam Link killed the Steam machine.
But yeah. I mean, and Gabe Newell's come on record saying that he wants to get away from Microsoft, so I can see why these are coming out, but I don't see them having a place in modern day. Oh, now, especially now they've announced a Steam Link, I can't see a place where the Steam machine belongs.
Yeah. What about you, Jeff? Do you see yourself recommending a Steam machine to someone, anyone?
Well, it's certainly, these are high-end gaming machines, a lot of them, and there's a whole range. So I can certainly see, there's a lot of really great systems on that list, and many of them could run Windows just as easily as SteamOS, and many of them do. Many of them come stock with both both OSs on pre-installed. So yeah, I don't have any problem recommending these. I don't think it's a game changer in any way. I think it's hey, gaming PCs. Here's some gaming PCs that are good gaming PCs. I'm much more interested, I think, in testing out firsthand the new controller. because I'm a little skeptical that I'll like that just based on my experience with touch pads in general. I prefer having sticks there. So the fact that people are touting these touch pads as being revolutionary it makes me much more intrigued.
Well, there's one stick now. There's one stick and a set of buttons. So they did go back a little bit on the old touchpad version. But yeah, it's certainly the thing is for most of the games. A lot of the games are sort of console controller enabled. In those cases, you're probably going to want to be using a console controller of some sort. But the promise of the Steam controller, which you're right, Jeff, is the key element of the whole ecosystem. The promise of that controller is that it's going to enable you to actually play games that aren't console controller enabled. And that I don't know.
I'm just confused with how the controller is going to work in general. I mean, every game I can think of that's built for a controller now has two analog sticks. I can't imagine playing a first-person shooter with one.
Well, it's supposedly the right trackpad type thing acts as an analog. It acts effectively as an analog controller. It works like that, but also allows you to do other things. The people who have had hands-on with the controller seem satisfied that it works. But yeah, it's certainly a tough thing to believe before you've had it in your hands. So
absolutely, yeah. It looks very alien.
Yeah. VR, the Vive and Morpheus have both been introduced. Vive is basically the HTC manufactured version of the Valve VR platform. It includes both Vive and Morpheus are a little bit different from what we've seen with the Oculus Rift in recent months and years. Hardware-wise, they're both really efficiently made. They're very high-quality hardware. They have high-quality screens with excellent refresh rates, so the nausea is very much minimized with both of those devices. The HTC Vive, or the Vive ecosystem in general, I should say the Valve VR ecosystem in general, will come out to developers in the spring and will be released at the end of this year. Morpheus is looking at early to mid-2016 for a commercial release. And both of those systems seem to be making quite a big deal of the fact that they have they are integrating the room into your experience, not in the sense of, you know, HoloLens that we saw from Microsoft, which is augmented reality, but in the sense that you can move around in the space that is virtualized by moving around in your room. And in the case of Valve VR, you have a couple of base stations that detect your movements with lasers. And when you get too close to a wall, it actually shows you the wall because it knows where it is. And I think it has cameras even, possibly, in the headset. And so it shows you by transparency where you're going so that you don't bump into the wall. And they also have controllers that act as your hands in the virtual world. So they are very much localized. They know where your hands are. And so they can simulate in the virtual world as well, your hands and what you do. And with the buttons, you know, you can grab stuff and things like that. So it's, in theory, a much more immersive world. But I'm sort of wondering if we're not just... I don't really want to... First of all, our tiny European capitals apartments are not going to be very friendly to that kind of setup. And second, I'm not sure I want to be, you know, walking around playing my video game. Is that motion gaming problems all over again? I'm skeptical.
To me, it sounds like they've taken Kinect and Move and then added an Oculus to it. And they said, this is what we're going to do next.
Right.
And it's, I mean, I like what Valve are doing. I like the idea of Valve VR because I know that Valve make good things, and I like the idea of Lighthouse. But as you said, I don't want to have to use two motion sensing controllers to play my games. If I wanted to do that, well, I'd go and do something.
I think that you're going to find, and this is just speculation on my part based on what they showed, mm-hmm. but I think you're going to find that it's going to be a lot less like quote-unquote motion control than it will be like just sort of knowing where you are in space and making your input into the game a natural human movement rather than a button press on the controller. And I think that's really from – obviously, I haven't had wasn't there, so I haven't had hands-on, but I had many conversations with people who did. And the thing that's so compelling and so interesting to me is, you know, they talk about this this painting program, this sort of, you're standing in a room and you've got the two controllers in your hand and you can paint an object in space. So you move your hand around, you make a circle and you put two dots for eyes and a little smiley face, right? So you make the smiley face. Mm. Well, now you can walk around it because it's actually a 3D object in space, and you can walk to the side of it where it would normally be a two-dimensional object. And now you can draw a nose out in the third dimension. And now you look down at one of your hands, which is mapped in three dimensions. And when you move or your hand around, it actually moves because you're holding that controller, and that controller is sensed by the cameras. And in your hand is a palette with all kinds of different paint colors. And you take your other hand that has the paintbrush in it and you tap the color that you want to paint with and you start painting in that color. So you're not selecting it from a button. You're not going into a menu. You're actually doing the physical motion that you would. And that other demo that they showed that was sort of the sky something or other, the three-dimensional board game that is a board game that lives in your room, and you walk around it and you touch the part, the piece over on the left-hand side of your room to move to that, and you move to the right-hand side of your room. You're literally walking around it, observing it, and interacting with it like you would any object that really exists in your physical space. So it's not about jumping up and down and waggling your arms and legs and doing the things that we're accustomed to with Kinect or Wii. It really is about placing you in a physical location that is virtualized and having you be able to interact with it in a completely natural, non-video gamey way. And I think that's transformatory. I think it's revolutionary. I think it's huge. And I think it's going to open up video games to a whole group of people, if they're willing to give it a try, that wouldn't even understand how to interact. And we've got all these new ways to live inside a virtual environment. Live is not the word I want. To interact inside of, yeah. of a, you know what I mean? It's allowing you to be there, be present, and feel like you can reach out and touch things and manipulate the game environment in a human way rather than in a controller way.
Yeah, so now you've put it that way, I'm a lot more on board. I hadn't heard of that paint simulation, but that sounds like exactly what I want from this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have to admit, your your enthusiasm for this is kind of communicative.
Infectious
for sure. So I'm sort of half convinced now of the potential. Well, the potential, I'm convinced. It's just I'm not exactly sure how that relates to gaming, and the parallel I'm still drawing to motion gaming is the idea that when you're going to be playing for, you know, a couple of hours long sessions, then the mere fact that you would need to be standing up and moving around and moving your arms, and it's easy to make fun of this, and it's like, oh, you can't, you know, you're so lazy that you can't even be standing up, but it's like, it is more tiresome to be walking around if it's actual a tiny little bit of exercise, and you don't necessarily want to be doing that when you're gaming. So I'm not sure if it leads itself to sustained gaming experiences.
Yeah.
So I'm that's where I, I'm.
If that's the go, you go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. No, please.
I'm wondering if they're actually going to target this at gamers then, or if it's going to be something they're making for the 3D modelers of that work in games now, like developers. Because think about the stuff you could do with Maya or Blender with this ability to use your hands on sculptures.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be for everyone, but for gamers, for sure. But Jeff,
Perhaps I'm Pollyanna. I tend to be. But for me, what I think is, it will do is just blow out the concept of what a video game is, right? Do I still want to have the experience of sitting in, on my couch, relaxing, playing a game? Of course. That's what video gaming is now. We still want to do that. That's still fun. That doesn't have to be all video gaming is. That doesn't have to be all what interactive entertainment is. Could there be games where I'm walking around my apartment doing things? Yeah. Could there be games where sometimes I'm sitting, sometimes I'm standing? Yeah. There's going to be I'm hopeful that developers will take this technology and not go, how do we make a first-person shooter in it? Although I'm sure there'll be plenty of that.
Well, but that was the Sony demo, actually.
Which looked cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
But my point is that my hope is we will expand what video games are, and there will be whole new genres. There will be, because there's new inputs, because there's new ways to experience these environments, we'll have interactive entertainment, interactive storytelling, games that we could not even imagine before this technology happened, because there was no way for them to be fun before. And now there is. Now I can walk around and do something in my world, or I can, I can interact with that board game in a way that making a board game on a computer is dumb. You know, I just think that there's going to be whole new possibilities. And to say, well, video games have always been X, so we can't have Y now. It's like, well, nobody's taking away your X. They're just giving you Y. And yeah, there's going to be people trying to make X with this new thing, and maybe it'll work and maybe it won't. But what I'm hoping for is that it's just going to be really new experiences instead of playing the 600th first-person shooter on a 2D screen with my video game controller that's slightly different from the 299 other ones I've played. I'm actually going to get these vastly new experiences that are just that are unprecedented.
Yeah, and I think that's what it boils down to, is that more tools for developers to play with is more diversity in gaming, and that's always good.
Yeah, you're very convincingly making me sound like an old curmudgeon. You know, like, oh, I like gaming to be my keyboard and mouse in front of my display, in front of my screen, and that's it.
I think that's the challenge.
That's not quite where I was going, but certainly it does lead to that, I guess. But
that's the challenge with these technologies, right? Is that in order for them to take off, in order for them to become a thing, people need to try them. I think that hearing about it or seeing video of some dork with a headset on wandering around a room, stumbling around, it looks dumb, right? But if you've tried it, and I haven't tried these new ones, but I certainly have tried Oculus and was sold immediately on it. And everyone that I've heard that's talked about Vive has said it is really next level, even from Oculus. When you try it, it is extraordinary. It's an extraordinary feeling to move your head and do completely natural human movements and have them translated one-to-one into a virtual world. And I think getting people to try it is going to be the biggest challenge in marketing these things, because there's no way to do a television commercial that conveys the experience.
Yeah. I was listening to someone on the Giant Bomb podcast earlier this week who were talking about they'd had experience with the Vive, and they were saying that what they saw was a model of one of the Portal 2 robots.
Right.
Life size. And then they turned around, there was one that was three stories high. And because it's in front of your eyes, it gives you that its immediate instinctual reaction. That's real reaction. And I think that that is what VR is going to be, is it's going to be making stuff real and instinctual. And I agree with Jeff that it's about getting the developers to do something amazing with it. You need to get them to do that Super Mario 3D Land with the Wii U. That's what we're going to need from VR, and then that will take off.
That's, you know what? I think I'm sold. And ultimately, the thing is, my worry about actually moving around and sustaining that for a couple of hours for a great video game experience, if that really doesn't work, then it's not like you're barred from sitting down and designing games where you're actually sitting down and doing more traditional type of things, or, you know, less extreme VR immersion type of things. the devices work both in both cases, so it's not like something is being taken away. Although the base stations plus the controllers plus, you know, the device itself, it's going to start to get a little bit expensive, I think.
Yeah, but, this is going to be a super, I think this is going to be like super enthusiast level stuff. I mean, it's going to be your...
At least in the beginning.
For sure, yeah. It's going to be like, I won't buy a Titan X, but a super enthusiast might, and they'll be the ones playing with them now. Or I didn't buy a dev kit Oculus. It's going to be the ones that the super video game enthusiasts go after.
But who? But kudos to them for not half-assing it. Kudos to them for making the tech the way that they envision it. And I wouldn't want someone to go halfway. I mean, I think the Gear VR is kind of evidence of this, the halfway point.
Yeah.
And that's not going to – I don't think that's going to move the needle.
All right, I guess – Oh, sorry. Go ahead, James.
I just say it's a little bit odd that Valve are still even going ahead with it, because didn't a lot of the Valve developers of VR move to Oculus earlier on? I remember seeing something about that.
Yeah, but
it's not like Valve is going to go, oh, you guys left? Oh, all right. Well, I guess we're not doing this anymore.
I mean, it just shows to how secretive Valve are and what's going on in there, because we knew that a bunch of them left. We had no idea they were still carrying on with it, and it's so like... Valve is such a unique company, and I would be unsurprised if they came out tomorrow and said something else was coming out.
Mm. Well, if they said Half-Life 3 was exclusive to Steam VR, how crazy would that be? Everybody
I could
would
see
buy
them
it.
Doing it, to be honest. Because
it would
I mean,
be the most brilliant marketing decision ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't see it. I mean, the thing is, there are a bunch, if it really costs, you know, in the neighborhood of $500, I don't think it's one thing to be very excited and, you know, saying you would sell your soul for Half-Life 3 and confirming it in every piece of marketing that Valve puts out by strange numerology. But then when it's actually time to shell out $500 for that one game, or $400 or $300 even, I don't know. Although... At the same time, you get a super cool VR system at, you know, for the price.
Yeah,
so.
The thing is, Valve has nothing to lose. They have nothing to lose.
And it's not a difference price point between buying your Xbox One for your Halo game.
Right. Exactly.
And there's precedent.
Although I think
Valve
it's
going to
be more
launch.
Than $500.
Oh, yeah.
True. Oh, you think it's going to be more than $500 for the Valve thing?
Yeah.
I would say $800-ish.
Wow.
I mean,
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, me too. But I mean, the dev kits, the original dev kit for Oculus was what, $600? And then you have to add on the two motion sensing controllers onto this thing as well.
Well, I'm hoping the headset itself is going to be in the $200 range fairly quickly.
We're
the
in a world
product.
Where a company is selling a $17,000 wristwatch that'll be obsolete in a year. Let's not kid ourselves.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see. I think the sweet spot is $200 to $300 max. I don't think they'll go beyond that. At least for Sony.
I will make that bet with you. The Vive will be more than $200 to $300.
Yeah.
If you had the two base stations and the controller, yeah, maybe.
I don't think they'll sell it without the base station. They might sell it without the controllers, but I don't think you can buy it. I'd be surprised if you'd be able to buy it piecemeal, because it won't work without the base stations, is my understanding, or at least won't work as advertised.
As intended, yeah.
Yeah.
So how much, something a little bit more consumer focused, the Morpheus, how much do you think it will go for? Retail?
Now that I think is going to be $399. I think they're going to try to aim for a consumer place. I'm hoping it's even less expensive. $299 would be great. That certainly seems... I think these are different markets, really, that they're shooting for. And you can tell just from the design, right? The Vive is like, we built this industrial piece of hardware that's going to be slapped on your face and give you the craziest VR experience we can possibly do. And Morpheus is like, look how cool our lights are. I mean, I'm really excited for Morpheus. I think it's going to be awesome, and it sounds awesome. But it certainly is much more consumer-focused, and it's going to be this plug-and-play option with PS4. I think they're much more concerned with a mainstream market. And I think, you know, everything that was said at GDC this last week was all about how they really designed it without price point in mind. And it's not going to be cheap, but I feel like it's going to be cheaper than Vive will be.
I don't think it can go beyond $299.
I would say $250.
Wow.
Yeah. I think
I hope you guys are right. That'd be great.
Yeah. It's, you know, the thing is, you have to sell it to people who already put $400 in a PS4. It's starting to become really expensive. And they need to, you know, it's going to fracture the market. It's going to be, you know, as much as the PS4 is selling, once the Morpheus comes out, you're going to have those who, and you need to convince developers, you're going to have those that have the Morpheus and those that don't. And if that number stays too low, those who do, then developers are not going to develop for it. So,
I mean, isn't that, I mean, I don't mean to jump ahead into the show, but you've got an article from a developer on that was talking on Reddit and saying that basically developers aren't picking up Morpheus.
Yeah, we can talk about it and then move on because VR is exciting. But basically, it was a post on Reddit where the guy was detailing exactly that issue. And he added something else as well, which was for PCs, you can take an existing game and you just bump up the power specs and display the image twice, one for each eye, and boom, you have sort of a base VR game. For PlayStation, if you try to bump up the power specs, it doesn't work. So your game cannot be easily translated into a VR version of the game. So that's why developers are bullish on the Morpheus, and he thinks that the thing isn't going to be picked up too much. On the other hand, you know, it's not like, as we were discussing, it's not like you have to replicate the exact same experience. Quite the opposite. You probably want to go from scratch and create something that's adapted to the thing. But yeah.
Yeah.
All right. There were a bunch of conferences at GDC. We're not going to go over all of them. Suffice to say that game developers apparently favor Steam and PC over other platforms and are not so concerned with how to monetize their games. Apparently, that's something that the higher-ups and the marketing folks worry about. And the other thing is that they were rating diversity as the second most important concern in gaming, or not concern, but important thing in gaming after game design. So it's good to see that this is getting mind share in the minds of developers. And there was also an interesting talk about culture wars and how to handle a community, which again is linked to the issues we've seen in the past year mm-hmm. with community and well, diversity in general. The one I really wanted to point to, though, and then you can tell me if you have remarks on all three of them, is the No Man's Sky conference, which was really fun because they were explaining how the world is so big, it's procedurally generated, it's so big that you actually cannot observe it as the developers cannot go out and observe it by themselves. It's so large that even if you spend, you know, a couple of minutes checking how it was generated because of the procedural generation, if you go and check it out, even a minute or two per system or per element is going to take 1.2 billion gajillion years. So they built robotic or virtual robotic space probes to go out and explore that virtual universe that doesn't exist and report on what they find with pictures and that kind of thing, so that they can actually see what that universe they've created looks like and correct here and there when that's needed. I thought that was a really fun idea.
It's bizarre. It's a game. It's little living things in games doing research on the game to report to their creators. It's really metaphysical and odd.
Skynet. It's Skynet. Yeah. It's all self-aware. We're doomed.
Well, that's a good balancing of the enthusiasm.
No, I you know what? I'm just ready to play that game. I don't need to hear any more about it. Just wake me when it's out. I don't need to hear any more you know, metaphors as to why it's the biggest game ever and how everybody I don't need any more of that. Just go radio silent until you give me a release date, and then I'm ready.
I didn't realize it was a PS4 exclusive.
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a PS4?
I do not.
Well, there you go. I'd wait a couple of days before sure. I go out and shell out the money for a PS4 just for that game. But
absolutely. Without seeing the game and having any experience with it, I'm surprised that at the power they can pull out of that machine. Then, considering like what you just said, the procedural generation with
well. So once the game is generated, they don't need the power in the PS4. It's already generated. They just need to display it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just server based, isn't it? Yeah. It's not all.
Oh no, not even. There is the server, but once it's done, it's done. They have the data of the world, and they don't need to regenerate it every time. I don't think that's the way it works.
Okay, so I was under the impression that it was generating as you were going to the planet, so I didn't realize it was pre-generated. Okay.
I don't think it's generating as you're exploring, and that's why they need the probes to see what's already been generated.
That makes sense, yeah.
Well, that's it for GDC. A few additional bits of news. If you're one of the people that doesn't have an Xbox One yet, unlike James, who doesn't have a PS4...
I have neither.
You have neither?
I have neither.
That is a little bit disappointing, I have to say. I'm shocked.
Yeah, my college budget does not allow consoles.
Well, you might want to think about the Xbox One then, because there's a Halo the Master Chief Collection bundle coming, which I was sort of hoping would be coming out last year, and it didn't, but now it's here. I think that might be the thing that makes me pull the trigger.
Does that game work yet, though, is the question.
Kind of. I don't know. Jeff, do you have it?
Do I have what?
The Master Chief Collection?
I don't. No. Yeah, that's... Okay. What, their 10th update that they've...
Yeah. I know they've been like putting out updates like every 2 weeks since it came out.
Oh, unbelievable.
It's still not working properly. Yeah.
Well, I think it's working well enough that they're doing a bundle now. So I think it's fairly safe. The other thing is Rock Band 4 has been confirmed. And I think I was listening to DLC a couple of weeks ago, and you guys were mentioning how... Actually, there's no reason why games centered around music should go away ever. It's kind of like sports. And that argument kind of single-handedly convinced me that I could be interested in a Rock Band or Guitar Hero again. Because it's true. There's no... They overdid it, and especially Activision overdid it a few years ago, but... Music is something that is universal and that I would be happy to be enjoying in video game form on an ongoing basis. So I think I can be looking forward to Rock Band 4 or Guitar Hero, whatever.
For sure. I'm happy that they're allowing you to import your Rock Band 3 and Rock Band 2 and 1 DLC.
They're going to try to.
I actually had a cool idea yesterday. Well, just... where it'd be cool if like you could get like Rock Band 4 bars, so karaoke bars, you go and you rent out your Rock Band 4 machines in these shops, and so instead of making it something you buy at home, it's a big thing that you do, like center parties around it,
basically karaoke, but with instruments.
But with Rock Band, yeah.
I would do that.
That. that's been like my living room 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But you see, again, we come to the apartment size. We don't all have your, you know, palaces and giant mansions that you have in the U.S.
Well, it's interesting. They're not going to do the keyboard anymore, evidently. So there's one fewer thing for you to have to purchase or have to set up in your small apartment. I'm ready for this to be back. I don't relish the idea of... having to buy instruments again. I gave away all my instruments, and now it looks like I'm going to have to reacquire them. Well, especially since they said they're working on trying to make the instruments backwards compatible, although we'll see if that actually happens or not. But I'm ready. I love these games. They're fun. I agree with you that the arms race of music games, you know, they crushed under the weight of its own hubris, I believe. But I think there's been enough time... There's been enough music in the interim that I think would be fun to see in a game. And I'm ready to have that experience again. And I just hope that they stay true to what their messaging is now, which is sort of stripping it down and getting back to the core of what really made it fun.
Yeah, I think what's another key thing about this is that this is a reason for or this amongst others, is a reason that you're going to have to go to brick and mortar stores. You can't buy Rock Band.
You can't download a plastic guitar yet.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, you can. You have to go to the store and buy this big box, and that's going to be
3D printing, guys. 3D printing.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I agree. I'm ready for a guitar. Let's start with that. But it's, you know, again, related to the music, I think I don't listen to music nearly as much as I used to. And I think that might even be a way of getting me to listen to new music. And I'm sort of in that situation where I love music. I've enjoyed music tremendously for many, many years, but now it's kind of this thing that's on the side that I never find time to do. And I'm sure I would find more time if it came in the tasty form of a video game. And then I would discover new bands maybe and go more to the music side of things. So I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Absolutely. I think if they could do one thing that I'd love them to do, it'd be like, instead of selling me DLC piecemeal, I would ask them to make it so I can pay $10 like a month Spotify style.
Oh.
Have access to a complete library. If they could do that, I would buy this 100% as soon as it came out.
I think I would pay $10. Maybe not 10, maybe 5.
Yeah. I'd pay $5 to $10,
much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Subscription. That could work. $5 to $10 subscription.
I think if they thought of it as a service instead of a game, I think that would be huge. Yeah. And it's been something we've been talking about for a long time. We used to talk about that on Week in Confirmed. Just, you know, make it into a service. But I think it might be trickier on their end than we think. But I'm hoping that's the direction they're headed.
Yeah, it would be definitely be tricky. They would need to negotiate with all of the labels individually, and yeah, we know that much bigger players have had trouble with these kinds of things. So
yeah, but that's the interesting thing about them porting the DLC from 1, 2, and 3 again, though, because that means they've got to renegotiate those licenses as well.
Yeah, they do have relationships for sure, so maybe.
Yeah.
All right, last little tidbit, which I just came across it today, and it's the most bizarre thing ever. Even more weird than the virtual drones exploring the virtual space of No Man's Sky. It's a game called Upsilon Circuit that was showed at PAX. Have you guys heard of that game?
I haven't.
Yes, I have. Okay. It's I think I just got review code for it, actually. Or not review code, review like press kits for it.
Okay. So let me, if you can explain, please go ahead. But I have the.
Yeah, so it's by Robot Loves Kitty, who made Legend of Dungeon. They're indie developers, and it's an ARPG where you play as it's like American Gladiator, but instead of playing, so you play as. You have 8 players on a server, and you have people spectating that server, and it's the one server. And so when the player dies, another person joins the server. It's kind of like a death match between the whole world watching this one show.
Hmm.
But, so the really key thing in this game is that it's perma-perma-death.
Yes.
So it's not like your character dies for good and that's it. It's
so
that
you die.
Your account, you can, in theory, never play it again.
Yeah.
So you only have one go at that game. And it gets even more tricky. It gets into Hunger Games level because the people watching that one server with only 8 players playing ever at the same time, they can decide to pay with microtransaction to send you bonuses, to send you help, or to drop more enemies on you.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes that weird virtual, like, seriously, it's like Hunger Games. I don't know if you guys have read or the books or seen the movies, but the people, so I could, I, you know, the people watching can send you packages in the Hunger Games and make you make it easier for you to, you know, help you out or make it more difficult, all of that. And I'm sort of wondering if it couldn't become this thing where some you know, famous streamers are getting ready for their one chance at going in this game and trying to get people to support them. And at the same time, you have the trolls that are going to make them their game session more difficult.
Pretty brilliant.
It's cool, right?
Pretty smart.
These developers are really cool, really cool. The developers, Robot Loves Kitty, it's a husband and wife development team. And the other game they made, Legend of Dungeons, is absolutely fantastic, if you guys haven't played it.
What is it? I don't think I even know what it is.
It's basically, it's a roguelike where you go down between floors and you have to kill things, and you randomly pick up masks and weapons. But the cool thing about it is that all the music is randomly generated. So every zone you go into has a different bar that randomly generates onto the next one. It's a basic roguelike, but it's a really, really fun iteration of the genre. Really fun game.
All right. Might have to check it out. Yeah. And I'm very curious to see if that Upsilon something turns into a little bit more Upsilon Circuit. It's definitely an intriguing concept.
Yeah. No, if developers can pull it off, I reckon this team can.
All right. We'll see. And I would love for celebrities in the gaming industry or, you know, otherwise to go in and do stuff. And maybe, you know, you can have like joint operations where the amount of money they make during that day where some 8 famous people show up is given to charity, or it's just such an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is.
We'll see. All right. I think that's going to be it for us. Thank you, guys. It was very enjoyable and both enthusiastic and soul-crushing show at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we are going to close the show. But before we do, please tell the internets where they can find you when you're not doing this show. Let's start with James.
You can find me on Twitter at Iyagovos. That's Iyagovos. And
Wait. Can you say that again? Because every time, James.
It's Iyagovos.
All right. The link would be in the notes.
Yes. And I produce stuff for IndieLove.com, which is a purely indie games focused website, and my own site, InitiativeCheck.com.
Excellent. Thanks very much. Jeff, what about yourself?
Now, I'm on Twitter at Jeff Cannata. That's with 2 N's and 1 T. And I, my video game show is called DLC. It's at 5x5.tv/DLC. My comedy show is called We Have Concerns. It's at wehaveconcerns.com. And my movie show is called The Slash Filmcast over at slashfilm.com. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com.
Podcasting behemoth. Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah.
Yes. The Bohemoth.
All right, very cool. I am Not Patrick on Twitter, and you can find this show and I was going to say others, but one other at frenchspin.com. The other one is about international news with international people from different countries and culture, and I enjoy it very much as well. If you want to comment, please go to frenchspin.com, as I was saying, and I guess that's going to be it. We will come back in a couple of weeks with more video game news.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.